Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A new career retrospective opens today at the new museum featuring the paintings of the late Robert Colescott, a provocative artist known for his work lampooning race and sex in late 20th century America. Colescott, as the first African-American, was the first African-American artist to represent the U.S. in the Venice Biennale in 1997. The exhibition is actually the new museum's second career retrospective for Colescott. The first was in 1989 and was co-curated by prolific artist curator Lowry Stokes Sims, who returned to curate this one as well.
Having Celtics going, so everybody stand with us. Art and Race Matters, the career of Robert Colescott, takes viewers through Colescott's life, beginning with his early abstract and still life paintings, through his social satire of the 1970s, which produced some of his most famous work, like his painting George Washington Carver Crossing the Delaware River. Colescott's career spanned six decades. He died in 2009 at age 83. The exhibition began at the Contemporary Arts Center in Cincinnati, where it was organized by then-director and chief curator Rafaela Plato, now the director of Speed Art Museum in Louisville, Kentucky. Art and Race Matters runs through October at the new museum, and joining me now to talk about it are Lowry Stokes Sims and Rafaela Plato. I'm going to both ask you to wait 1 second while I figure out my headphone situation. Let's see. Did it work? Hi, Lowry.
Hi.
Oh, there you are. I'm Rafaela. Nice to meet you as well.
Hi. Wonderful to be here. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you for your patience as well. Lowry, you created a 1989 retrospective of Colescott's work, also at the new museum. Different place, but at the new museum. As you think about the past two decades, how does the work from the last two decades between his 1989 and his death, how does it reshape his legacy?
That's an interesting question. You know, he's always been an artist that sparks controversy and ambiguity. And I think that the timing of our show was just at the moment to sort of catch a wave of people sort of reconsidering some of the more controversial aspects of his work in the context of Me Too, Black Lives Matter, you know, mm-hmm. and all those kinds of social commentary. I'm in France, so I missed the opening because of different things. But I have friends who are telling me that well-known art critics, whose name shall not be named, are just blown away by the freshness of the work. And I had seen many layouts. People have been sending me photographs. And the show has permeated since the first, you know, iteration in Cincinnati in September of 2019, then it was quarantined in Portland for a year, Akron dropped out, then Sarasota came in, and then Chicago, and now, you know, like, we were just really pleased when the new museum signed on. But they say that the energy of Colescott still, you know, bursts through in the work.
And the layout's spectacular. I mean, it's that space is so big, yeah. And each painting gets its own opportunity to shine. I think the way, yeah. with a show that has so much in it, you still, right. Each painting has its own opportunity. Do you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. I saw the show in Cincinnati, of course, and then in Portland. And Portland was a much closer, you know, smaller space, and we worried about it. But there's a way that his, and I know in Sarasota, Anne-Marie Russell, who's the director, she had these beautiful new galleries that I had visited. And there's a way that his work requires a lot of space so that you can concentrate on them. But when you hang them close, they make you talk about, you know, like the dialogue between them mm-hmm. even more. You know, up closely. So he works either way, I think.
Rafaela, we see some of the earliest work from the late 40s to the early 60s. What was Colescott concentrating on at this time creatively?
Early on in his in the earlier part of his career, you see still lives, you see portraits, and so it was a much more traditional, let's say, approach from a palette point of view, and then of course also from a genre point of view. And then the work goes through quite a, let's say, revolution when he found himself in Egypt for quite some time, where he was on a GI Bill. And all of a sudden, the color palette becomes just vibrant and lush. And also, his approach to the figure changes very, very much. And it's much more informed by reality than informed by a much more maybe symbolic understanding of what he was depicting. And then, of course, when he comes back to the United States in the middle of the civil rights movement, he feels a very urgent need to really become maybe more self-aware of who he is as a person, and how he thinks of his own identity as a Black artist in the United States. And this is then when he turns, when his painting style changes once again, and it becomes really a very, at times, sarcastic, ironic commentary on the social and political realities in the United States during that time.
Yeah, Larry, I'm thinking about, he goes from Egypt and then to, I believe it's to Oakland, right, in 69 and 70?
Right.
Yeah, I have to imagine living in Oakland in 69 and 70, you couldn't not be affected by the political environment. I mean, that was such a fertile place.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you think of the Panthers, you know, being there. And then also, you know, like the tantalizing aspect of his return there is that he would come into contact with a lot of the new California funk, R. Crumb, Boris Bierman, and people like that. And, you know, it's a very complicated journey that he makes because the work that Rafaela was talking about is sort of like these kinds of streams of color with humanoid elements, and then they start to coalesce into like more recognizable form, but have a kind of poster, you know, like quality to them, which is not quite pop art, not quite, you know, West Coast figuration. And it's really intriguing because we're still sort of undercovering, and we're relying on our curator, Matthew Wesley, to do that. He's working on a monograph of Colescott to sort of figure out just exactly how that happened. But it just was his way of finding a very original way. But you can sort of see a kind of synergy with the work of Roy DeForest, H.G. Westerman, and he was very fond of Joan Brown and Manuel Neri. So that those are the kinds of artists that really kind of informed his work at that time.
My guests are Rafaela Plato and Lowry Stokes Sims. We're talking about Art and Race Matters, the career of Robert Colescott. It is now at the New Museum. Rafaela, during this period of time, how would you describe his depiction of women? And what would you want people to think about or consider? Maybe ask themselves questions as they see these paintings from this time.
From the 60s particularly?
Yeah, I think so. Late 60s, 70s. Yeah.
You know, I think that as a woman living in the 21st century, you look at these pictures and you are sort of hit over the head with a very stereotypical depiction of women. How, you know, I personally find kind of appalling to a certain degree, right? I mean, it's the typical stereotypical voluptuous woman that puts forth her sexual and sensuous prowess. There's a lot of blonde hair. There's a lot of like big busted women and with swirling hips, and so it's a very stereotypical male gaze, so to speak, depiction of women. And then of course, when we look at some of the imagery of African-American women, you have Mama Jemima, so another stereotypical depiction of how the Black female was often perceived or considered in the United States. And at the same time, then you also have African-American beauties with slender bodies, but all there to appeal to the male gaze. So he's definitely playing with that. And as a contemporary woman of today, it gets under your skin a little bit, and you realize that we've come a long way, but we have not come long enough. And I think this is what's so potent in Colescott's work, is that there's enough still that resonates with today, and there are so many things that we have not overcome yet. And I think this is why the work is still so potent, because it still, creates that pit in your stomach, or that sensation under your skin that is just irritating and frustrating. And he just puts it right there in your face. But luckily, with a sense of humor and with enough sarcasm that you're not just totally, utterly offended by it. I think that's the power of Colescott. Yeah. Just able to hold that tension between, this is the stereotype, but I realize it is one, and I'm just going to rub it into your face because there's truth to it, but I'm also sarcastically aware that it is a stereotype. And I think, that just makes the work so incredibly powerful.
Ilara, I was going to say, I think it's got a little bit of art side eye. If you know what I mean, like a little, there's a sarcasm. I think that's a good word. I would love to hear how you think about it.
We used to have conversations about it because, I was really struck when Spike Lee did his movie Chirac, he was talking about the fact that some of the reaction among the Black community to the movies is Black people just don't have, they have trouble with certain kinds of sarcasm and humor. But it's kind of weird because we're also known for our humor that has sort of really gotten us through some of the most horrendous aspects of life, in this country, and continues to do so. And there are scholars like Jody Cutler, as well as Matthew, who compared him to Richard Pryor, Paul Mooney, who also had that kind of edge, to them. And I think in those edges, that was the first thing that really attracted a nice, well-brought-up Catholic middle-class Black girl like me to his work, was the fact that, it sort of challenged, all the stuff that you were talking about. But as Rafaela has said, underneath it, he's sort of like really showing up some of the attitudes that we have in society, and then we can't look away or ignore them. We have to sort of confront them.
I'm curious about your thoughts on, and I know you have them, on his referencing other artworks. The most famous one is George Washington Carver crossing the Delaware. He has the Tater Eaters. He has a take on a Picasso imagery there. I'm curious, is this again part of his wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or is he trying to say something else? Or what is he trying to say? I mean, they're fascinating to look at. I'm not really sure I've processed them entirely, Lowry, to be honest. I sat and I looked at them for a long time, and I thought, these are really interesting. I'm not sure what I'm seeing just yet.
Rafaela, tell her about your first encounter at the Rose Museum with Colescott.
Well, I the first time I experienced Colescott's painting was in 97 at the Venice Biennial. And, I was still living in Germany at the time. And, as a young art historian and curator, of course, I was deeply steeped in George Grosz and Max Beckmann. And his paintings really made my head spin, because it was like a similar approach, but there was a lot that I couldn't quite wrap my mind around from just a cultural perspective. When I look at paintings like The Potato Eaters, I mean, what's so powerful about these pictures is, yes, of course, that they are really astute appropriations, but these are images that are wildly known. They're almost part of our cultural unconsciousness. And in the original painting, you know, you see that really desperate farmer's family gathering around the table, and the atmosphere is a very dire and melancholic one. And then you see Colescott's paintings, and you have this jolly group of African Americans that are just, you know, I mean, you almost like hear them singing. The painting has like such a incredible multi-sensuous quality to it. You almost hear them singing and laughing, and they just seem to be able to make the best of their environment and the life situation that they find themselves in. Again, it is a very stereotypical presentation in my mind of how in this country, in the United States, people have thought of like the Black family, like no matter what circumstances, you know, there's a smiling face, and there's a certain jovial nature. So it's, again, this incredible like irony that he plays with, that Van Gogh certainly didn't toy with at all. So
is it Laurie, is it satirical?
I think it's satirical, but I think the use of satire and appropriation is something that Black artists have been using a lot since, I would say, the mid 20th century. And I think what Colescott did initially was he sort of realized the only way he could get attention and sort of make the kinds of comments he wanted to make about the representation of Blacks in art history, what kinds of facts are taught about Blacks in art history, was to sort of draw on well-known compositions and then riff off of them, you know, and they're very, very, you know, effective. Something like the Demoiselle d'Alabama, which is a takeoff on Picasso's Demoiselle d'Avignon. Well, he's really talking about how Picasso was positioned, you know, like say next to an African carver, you know, as this kind of ruler between primitive and civilized. So
we're gonna have to leave it there. We're about to run out of time. I want people to make sure they see it and they know about it. It is at the New Museum, Art and Race Matters, The Career of Robert Colescott. Rafaela and Lowry, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate
Thank you for having us.